Mel Banta. Michael Boggs.
Present.
Thank you. Frank Cantone. Sean Chang.
Present.
Thank you. Carl Cornell.
Present.
Thank you. Erica Crawley.
I'm here.
Thank you. Bethany Dixon. Jamie Doss. Thomas Hambury.
Here.
Thank you. Rose Howard.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Benda.
Present.
Thank you. Kevin Fitch. Kyle Carnuda.
I'm here.
Thank you. Ellie Krumpowers.
I'm here.
Thank you. Jeremy Cruiser. Sophie Lanchas.
I'm here.
Thank you. Galberton Lucane. Christy Mahoney.
Hello.
Thank you. David McDermott.
I am here.
Thank you. Pia Mengers.
Here.
Thank you. Anne Morse.
Present.
Thank you. Kevin Phipps. Is that Kevin? Stephanie Rasu.
I'm here.
Thank you. Kate Supran.
I'm here.
Thank you. Deb Serene.
I'm here.
Jana Van Houten.
Present.
Thank you. And Danielle Weirson.
Present.
Thank you.
Yvonne, you missed me.
Oh, Wendy, thank you, Wendy.
Me
You're
too.
welcome.
Who's me too?
Adam.
Adam.
Blake
Yeah,
Slade.
we had already called your name, Adam. Thank you.
Jeremy Cruiser is also here.
Awesome. Jeremy Cruiser, thank you. All right. I think I got everyone. And if I didn't, if you came in a little bit later, I'll make sure to take a look at the screen and mark you present. Rika, back to you.
All right, thank you, Yvonne. So now we'll go to the university land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Cayuga Nations. They are Gayakono, are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connections of the Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Awesome. So moving on to the next item of our agenda is the approval of the March 5th, 2025 minutes. It's hyperlinked in the agenda. If you could take a look at that, I'll give folks about a minute or so to review it for any updates that are needed. And if not, then I'll just open the floor for a motion to approve. Is there a motion on the floor to approve the minutes or amend the minutes? Rose?
I believe for section 5A, the executive board is sponsoring the resolution.
Thank you for that, Rose. So we need to update that for it to have an additional point there. So it should be two that we then decided to sponsor. Okay. Are there any other amendments to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes with Rose? Okay. Is there a motion to approve the minutes by unanimous consent with the proposed amendment?
I think we have to vote on updating the amendment, then vote on approving the minutes. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Carl.
I do put a motion to approve the adjustment of the addition of the executive committee taking over that responsibility by unanimous consent.
Is there a second? Rose? Okay. So it's properly moved and seconded. That the minutes will be amended to include a second point to section 5, part A, subpart I. So there should be an inclusion of two I's. Is there an emotion to approve the minutes by unanimous consent?
Yeah, in my heart, that's right. Yeah.
I will motion to approve the minutes by unanimous consent.
Thank you, Carl. Is there
a second?
Thank you. So we have moved and seconded the unanimous consent of approving the EA minutes from March 5th, 2025. And moving on to the next item on our agenda. Call for late additions to the agenda. Does anyone have anything they would like to add to our agenda today? Seeing no additions to the agenda, we'll move on to our business of the day. So we have a brief presentation by the Office of Institutional Equity in Title IX. We are joined by our AVP for the Office of Institutional Equity in Title IX, Katie King. Katie, I'll turn it over to you so we can talk about how staff members fall into the process, whether that's a advisor, a support person, or even participating on a hearing panel.
Thank you, Erica, and hello, everyone. My name is Katie King, and I'm the AVP for Institutional Equity in Title IX here at Cornell. I joined Cornell in November of 2023, so I've been here for almost a year and a half. I'm going to share my screen. Let me see. Hopefully this works. Can you see my deck? Yes. Okay, great. So I'm here today to talk about how our employees can be involved in the processes in our office. So the first thing I just want to remind everyone about is what it means to be a designated reporter. So designated reporters are certain employees here at Cornell that have a duty to report allegations of sexual misconduct involving a student to our office. So it actually is a very narrow set of allegations that need to be reported. It is sexual harassment, sexual misconduct, sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking, things that would constitute sexual harassment or sexual misconduct, and it must involve a student as either the complainant or respondent. Those must be reported to our office by designated reporters. Not everyone is a designated reporter. There are a list of designated reporters that are available on our website. And it includes people like every dean, the provost, chairs of departments, everybody that works in athletics, except for administrative staff, right? Like most people that work in housing and residential life. But if you ever have a question as to whether you are or are not a designated reporter, please just reach out and ask us and we'll let you know. That's not to say that you cannot report if you are not a designated reporter. We do encourage reporting, but if you are a designated reporter, you must report sexual misconduct involving students. You can connect with us to provide the information in many different ways. You can email us, call us, stop into our office, file an online report. Getting the information to us any of those ways will satisfy your reporting obligation. And it's just really important to note that if you are a designated reporter, you cannot promise confidentiality when you're talking with students about allegations of sexual misconduct. Other folks, other employees have a duty to respond in the workplace. And so if you are a supervisor, a manager, a people leader of others, and you learn of discrimination or harassment in the workplace, you have a duty to respond to that in the workplace. You don't necessarily have a duty to report it to our office, but I do recommend it because the folks in our office are trained to conduct investigations into these matters and to ensure that these matters are handled appropriately. So it's really important, though, if you become aware of any allegations of discrimination, harassment involving employees in the workplace, and it could be, for example, a student harassing an employee and making a student forming a hostile environment for an employee, we still need to address this. We have a duty to protect our employees from working in hostile environments because of discrimination or harassment. And I always say, if you ever have a question about any of this, please call. We can always talk in hypotheticals. We can always just give you feedback on what we think without needing to know necessarily the parties that are involved. But what we really want to make sure is that situations are being handled appropriately in all instances. So that's just in terms of like designated reporters and duties to respond. But how can our employees become more involved in our processes? We in the Title IX space have hearings on issues that have risen to the level where it requires a formal complaint. And so if there is a situation involving sexual misconduct, involving student, staff, faculty, whomever, the process is resolved generally through a hearing. And here at Cornell, we have hearing panels that hear the cases. And so our hearing panels are comprised of three members, and they are made up of both staff and faculty who are volunteers to the process. These hearing panelists are trained. We are always looking for people to join our hearing panels, especially if you, if you have an interest in this area, if you are looking for a way to, volunteer some of your time. We ask that folks serve on one hearing panel a year, and sometimes not even one a year. So maybe sometimes it will be one every other year if you do volunteer to be a hearing panelist. What being a hearing panelist means is we would conduct an investigation into an allegation of some type of sexual misconduct. We create an investigative report and an investigative record. The report is a summary of all of the evidence that has been collected during the investigation, and the investigative record is all of the evidence. And so it is all of the transcripts of the interviews that we have done, any emails, text messages, audio that we have collected. And that is put together into a very long PDF document with a nice table of contents. And so as a hearing panelist, your job is to first of all, be trained, which we train everyone to do this, then to review the record and the report in advance of a hearing, and then sit in a hearing. And our hearings are live. They do happen on Zoom, and they are during business hours. And so sometimes the hearings will run all day for 8 hours. Sometimes they will be in 4-hour chunks because it will depend on the availability of everyone involved, including the hearing panelists. And they typically take between 1 and 2 days to hear evidence from the parties and any witnesses, and then an additional, several hours to a half a day to a day for the hearing panel to deliberate. And what the hearing panel's job is to decide whether it is more likely than not, so whether by a preponderance of the evidence they find that the allegations are proved or are not proved. And so what you are doing is you are finding whether the respondent, the person who is alleged to have engaged in the behavior, whether they are responsible or whether they are not responsible. And then another point, another part of being a hearing panelist is if you find that a respondent is responsible, then the hearing panel implements sanctions. So the hearing panel discusses with each other, and we also have a hearing chair who is the same person every time. He works at an external agency or external business. Talk about what kind of sanctions have been issued in similar cases in the past. There will be guidance. There's information that's provided in terms of, for these types of allegations, these are the types of sanctions that have been issued in the past. And then the hearing panel will implement sanctions. There is one level of appeal for review. And so the parties can appeal the hearing panel's decision. And that is the job of the hearing panel. So in total, it can maybe be in terms of like an overall time commitment, maybe 40 hours a year stretched out, which includes the training component, the review of the materials for the hearing, actually sitting in the hearing, and then the deliberations component. So I can take questions after if anybody has any. So that's one way that employees can be involved. Another way employees can be involved is to serve as a co-investigator. And so in all cases where an employee is named as a respondent, we utilize co-investigators in those cases. And so we have trained investigators in our office that investigate all policy 6.4 violations. And then if there is an employee as a respondent, we will have, if it is a staff member, we will have a staff co-investigator. If it is a faculty member, we will have a faculty co-investigator. And that person works with the investigator from the Office of Institutional Equity and Title IX to conduct interviews and then work on the final investigative report and make sure that, you know, all of the information that we've gathered is in there. Co-investigators can play like a very important role for us when it comes to looking into employee respondents, because folks, you know, may have a really good sense of like what work looks like in this particular area, or may bring their own employee expertise to bear on the questions that we ask. And so we really enjoy working with our co-investigators. To be a co-investigator, you also need to go through the same training as our similar training as our hearing panelists do. And this training is all online, is available in modules that you can complete at your convenience just prior to doing any of this work. And then we would ask that you be a co-investigator perhaps once a year. We have more hearings. We have more hearings involving Title IX matters than we actually have need for co-investigators, just given the number of formal complaints that are brought against employees versus the number of Title IX cases that we have. And so I would not anticipate that you would be asked to be a co-investigator more than once a year. Folks can do both. You can sign up to be a co-investigator and a hearing panelist, or you can sign up to be just one or the other. We have an application on our website for both of these options. And so if anyone is interested, and I encourage you to be interested and to fill out the application or to share this with people that you work with and know at Cornell that may be interested in doing either one of these things, you would just fill out the application. We review applications as they come in on a monthly basis and get back to folks and then work with them to get the training set up. So this is another way that you can be involved in the process. And then just finally, you can always serve as an advisor to or support person to someone who is involved in the process. And so if you happen to know a student, a colleague, someone at Cornell who is either thinking of becoming a complainant in one of our processes or is a respondent, you can come with them, and they want you to be an advisor or support person for them. You're allowed to come with them to meetings and really provide support for that person that you know. Support persons and advisors do not actively participate in the process. And so it is always the complainant, the respondent, or the witnesses that are there to provide statements and be interviewed. But advisors and support persons can be there to provide emotional support, to encourage, if the person that's being interviewed needs to step out, you can step out with them and talk with them. And so this is another way that you can help in the process. Employees becoming advisors and support persons really happens more naturally. Like, we don't assign employees as advisors and support persons at this time. But you are welcome to, if someone comes to you, please know that you're welcome to serve as their advisor or support person if that's something that they are interested in you doing. And I can share this deck with you as well. And that is my presentation. So not sure if anyone had any questions for me.
Thank you, Katie, for that. And now we'll leave some time for folks to ask questions. Yvonne?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm just wondering, for those interested, would you be able to share the link where this application is?
Yes, absolutely. I can get that. And should I throw it in the chat, or do you want me to send it to you for your minutes? What's the best?
You can put it in the chat, and then we can send it out to the assembly's listserv.
Okay, I can do that.
Wendy?
Thanks, Erica. And thank you for coming, Katie. I appreciate it. I'm just curious, at what point does your office step back and potentially the authorities like IPD or CUPD get involved, or do they get involved?
Absolutely. So our process is an administrative process, and it is separate and distinct from a criminal process. And so in each situation, we always let the complainant know that you have a right to go to CUPD or IPD, whichever would be more appropriate, state police. But we would never force someone to do that. And we do not report to CUPD or IPD, particularly in cases involving sexual assault, sexual harassment. Now, obviously, there are incidents that may involve some type of workplace harassment that really must be dealt with and we must report, but we would always work with the complainant to let them know that we are doing that. We are always also happy to facilitate a warm handoff to particularly CUPD, as we do have a good working relationship with them, but also to IPD if we are able to do that and facilitate that conversation. And then we also work really closely, and this is really in terms of people that are impacted parties, so complainants and or victims. We can do a warm handoff to the share office, which is a confidential office and which serves both students and employees, and can provide confidential advice and resources on how they can interact with the police as well. I hope that answers your question.
Allison,
could you clarify the designated reporters for staff situations? Is there such a thing? Does it just apply to student when there's a student involved, or?
Let's say a staff member is sexually harassed. No, there is no designated reporter in that situation. And if the person's supervisor is aware of it, and this is something that is happening in the workplace, the supervisor has a separate and distinct obligation to stop the harassment from occurring, prevent it from occurring in the future, and remedy any hostile environment. So they really are separate obligations. But if it is, for example, a staff person with no supervisory authority or obligations speaking to their friend who is also a staff person with no supervisory authority or obligations about a situation, there is no required reporting in that situation.
And if a staff member comes to the Title IX office just to get information, is the Title IX office have any required responsibilities there? If someone has a concern, not a supervisor, but someone who might consider being a complainant, that kind of situation.
Sure. So staff can come to our office and ask like general questions. Our office is a designated reporter. We are designated basically to report to ourselves. But what we would need to do, and every situation is going to be different, and this is like such a lawyerly answer, but it is so fact specific. It is always dependent on the facts. But we are definitely happy to consult in like a hypothetical situation, answer hypothetical questions. And I will also note that in almost all instances, we want to allow the impacted party to make the determinations as to what happens next. And we do that so long as we don't have other obligations, such as we do need to act to remedy hostile work environments. That does not necessarily need to involve like a formal complaint, for example. We can do a lot of things informally, particularly on the employee side. And I will also say that you can just call and talk to us anonymously. You can also, if you file an anonymous report through our online reporting form, that becomes difficult because we don't have a way to respond to anonymous reports filed through the reporting system. But if you pick up the phone and call, you can talk to someone anonymously.
Thank you.
Yeah. And sorry, I'm still trying to, I will get this link before I hop off the call and I'll put it in the chat.
Awesome. Do we have any last questions for Katie before we move on to our next part of the agenda?
What?
Oh, all right. Seeing none, thank you, Katie, so much for coming to speak with us. We are going to move on to the next item in our agenda, which is the EA organizational meeting. Which is going to be scheduled for April 16th, 2025. This particular meeting is going to happen again during our during the regular scheduled time of our current meeting that's set for that date and time, but we are also having a visit from the president. So there will be 30 minutes of that meeting that, well, 45 minutes of that meeting that we will lose. So we are coming to ask folks, would you all be okay to extend just the April 16th meeting by 30 minutes? We wanted to bring this to you all in advance so that we can get all the things done for our organizational meeting. We recognize that our organizational meetings usually go over. So we wanted to give ourselves a buffer so we don't have folks who are planning meetings directly behind it and not being able to stay for the entirety of that organizational meeting. So wanted to hear folks' thoughts on that. Marcy?
Yep, so sorry. I just want to confirm the organizational meeting is the meeting where all of the chairs are, the executive committee is formed, correct? Is that?
Thank you, Marcy. Yep. Yes, so the organizational meeting is the first meeting we will have after having selected new EA representatives. And we would use this organizational meeting to select the new executive board and chairs of committees, I believe. Wendy?
Yeah, Marcy actually just took my comment, but yeah, just to make sure. And I also just want to stress to people, it's really important that we have people there. We already take an hour and 15 minutes out of people's days. If we can just ask for an extra half hour, we didn't get the word that, you know, Interim President Kolakoff and VP Lovely were coming until recently, so it does kind of eat into that. But we do need to have this in place, and it will involve the newly elected 25, 26 EA members. So I just don't want to see us sitting with 12 people and some people are, you know, elected to the executive committee just kind of by default. So that's just my own personal perspective and plea to please stay and be there.
Thanks, Wendy. Danielle?
By there, this is in person or this is on Zoom?
Zoom.
Okay.
Carl?
Yeah, I also wanted to reaffirm that if for some reason you cannot extend, please let us know if you are interested in positions as well beforehand, so that way we can bring those to the meeting, but we really, really do need your participation. And we really do rely on, you know, the people power that we have here to keep things moving, keep things running. So thank you for considering any position that you might be.
Are there any other questions? So I wonder,
thank you so much for doing this.
Vote on whether or not we should extend this or what's going to happen.
I do think we need to vote on extending the meeting by 30 minutes, extending the April 16th meeting by 30 minutes by unanimous consent.
So is there a motion on the floor to approve the meeting for April 16th, 2025 to be extended by 30 minutes?
So moved.
Seconded.
Awesome. Since this wasn't done by unanimous consent, can those all in favor please check your green yeses?
And as a point of order, please make sure the EA is in front of your name so that we can make sure that we accurately collect the numbers of people that are approving and the numbers of
appropriate. Those not in favor, please click the red X. Okay. If there are any abstentions, can you please use the slowdown button? That would be me.
I'll say that.
Awesome. So it looks like we will be extending our April 16th meeting by 30 minutes. So it will conclude at 1:45 instead of 1:15. Thank you all so very much. Appreciate your time. We'll go on to the next item on our agenda. Oh, Wendy, yes.
Before you go in, I just wanted to a point of information and a reminder, the organizational meeting, we actually go into executive session for that. So it'll basically be, we'll have the visit from the interim president and VP Lovely. There probably won't be too much business of the day on the agenda, and then we'll go into executive session.
Thank you, Wendy. Marcy?
Oh, sorry. Is there any way that the Office of Assembly could maybe extend our calendar invitation to note the half hour just so that our calendars are blocked?
Thank you. Thing. We can, oh, was that Eric? Thanks, Eric. So Eric will extend our calendar invite so we have that space held. Awesome. So moving on to the next item in our agenda, preparing for a TCAT work stoppage. Yvonne, was this your item?
Yes, thank you, Erica. As you all may have seen in an email that came out from Parking and Transportation Services, there is a potential for a TCAT strike. They already voted to authorize a strike. However, we don't have any information as of right now if and when that will happen. Nevertheless, we understand that a lot of employees, staff members, rely on public transit to make it to campus. So we want to encourage you to, number one, read that email and start planning ahead if you were to be impacted by that strike. And number two, one of the things that I do want to share is that we had a conversation as the executive committee with our liaison, VP Lovely. And, you know, we talked about this. And one of the points there is that you can connect with your supervisor and seek some flexibility if your job allows you to work remotely, should you be impacted by this strike. So I would encourage you all to, you know, seek that conversation with your supervisor if that's something that needs to be done sooner rather than later, so that you can have that plan in place. And if you have any questions or concerns, like, please feel free to reach out to us in the executive committee. More than happy to continue the conversation with our liaison if anyone is having any additional thoughts on this. We do recognize that the other suggestions for preparing, such as carpooling or potentially driving into campus, might not necessarily be options. So again, if this is something that impacts you specifically or your constituents, please either connect with us or share your thoughts with the rest of the EA here. Thank you.
I would just like to add to that, for those of you and your constituents, right, who may need to reach out to their supervisors and let them know ahead of time, right, that this is an impending strike is coming and they may need some leniency when getting to work because they heavily rely on public transit. That may be a conversation you want to have sooner rather than later. And then if there are any issues that come from that conversation or those conversations between some of your constituents and their supervisors, please bring that back to us so we can start relaying that information to our liaison so they can figure out how to address that issue from top down. So moving on to, do we have any other questions, comments, concerns around the TCAT work stoppage? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to the next item on our agenda, the Presidential Task Force on Institutional Voice. Yvonne, I believe that was yours as well.
Yeah, so I wanted to share a little bit and then I wanted to hear if anyone has any thoughts about this particular item. So there was an email, I believe, that came into our inboxes late last week about the Presidential Task Force for Institutional Voice. We reached out to, oh my gosh, Vice Provost Avery and Dean Olin to inquire about the involvement or collaboration from staff in this particular task force. As of right now, there doesn't seem to be an official channel for staff. Nevertheless, they do plan on doing open forums where we can share our thoughts on this. And yeah, that's the information that I have and I wanted to share. And I'm wondering if anyone has any thoughts on either the task force implementation or anything involved around this.
Kyle.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I think this is the same thing that I emailed Jill about, so if it's not, I'm sorry, but I think it's the same thing. I did hear from some people that I work with that they have some concerns about flagging their opinion about what and how the institution should be responding. The only way to like elevate our thoughts is to send an email right now, which means that our like personal names would be attached to the sentiment, which is like good and hopefully a lot of people use it, but it could be an idea to create some kind of an anonymous box, like a Dropbox or a submission form where people can submit their thoughts without fear of, you know, potentially having their opinion on the record or I don't know. I think people have a lot of strong feelings about this and they may not be likely to engage if there isn't an anonymous option.
Thank you for that, Kyle. Maybe we can reach out. What we can do is reach out to the co-leadership for the task force and see if they have any anonymous mechanisms for us to submit feedback through. And then if not, seeing if we could hold space on our EA page of the OA site to collect information similarly to how we did for the interim policies. Thank you. Are there any other questions, comments, concerns around the Presidential Task Force on Institutional Voice? Allison?
It's interesting about the interim policy. I do wonder. I don't know if there's anything else to say, but I do wonder if how and if at all this fits with the expressive activity policy stuff, how it could impact employees, if at all, maybe not. I just, it's related to expression. So even though it's institutional. Just a thought.
Marcy?
I don't have an answer, but I just wanted to. We're meeting, the university assembly is meeting with the president next week, and one of our questions was more about this committee. I feel like there isn't much more known other than who's on it. And again, as we all saw, they're all basically faculty. And then my other question to him was going to be, we haven't really heard about the expressive activity policy and what the next steps are. If it will be implemented, will there be changes to the new proposed policy? So hopefully we'll get a little more information, but those are my questions too.
Ivan?
Yes, thank you so much, Marcy, for sharing that. And since y'all are going to be meeting with the interim president, I do wonder if you're able to ask those questions, right? Also, like on behalf of the EA, kind of like what was the thought process behind the chairs and then the appointings of the committee? And like you said, right, like there's no staff members involved in that. So again, what was the thought process? Just kind of understanding that we have shared governance and we don't see our representation within that committee. And, furthermore, to Kyle's point, if you're able to, just ask about a potential anonymous way for us to be able to share that feedback. Thank you. Thank you so much, Marcy.
I guess I'll just pose a question and then we can move on to our EA folks or anyone on this call, right? Is there any concern amongst us that there is no representation of the staff voice there? Because it's co-led by two faculty and then all of the committee is nothing but faculty. There's no alumni voice, there's no staff voice, there's no student voice present in that space at all. So when we think about the institution and its voice, is it not all encompassing of those places? And are we concerned about the lack of staff voice in that space? Marcy.
I feel like I'm hugging, but yes, I feel there is a concern. On the other hand, is that a committee I would want to serve on? No, being that we are at will employees. There must be concern. You can't just be fired willy nilly. It's hard for us to have a voice. So who among us could be on that committee? I don't know, but yeah, I would love to see some staff and students and alumni representation. So it would be good to know what was the thought process of the committee and the choices for it too.
Yvonne?
Yeah, just want to echo again, to your question, Erica. Yes, I feel the same way as Marcy. I am concerned that there's no representation across the board from the different shared governance entities. And like you said, right, like we are broader than the faculty. And I think it's going to be important for that representation to be there to speak on the institution.
Thank you all for that feedback. We're going to move on to our committee and liaison reports. So the executive committee, Yvonne?
Yes, I spoke a little bit earlier about the conversations and meetings. So that's kind of my report. Again, if y'all have any feedback, any thoughts, any comments that we should bring to our liaison, don't hesitate to reach out to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Yvonne. Communications, Outreach, and Recognition Committee, Rose.
Thank you, Erica. So we last met March 12th from 3 to 3:45. I will say we've had some low attendance at our meetings since I became chair. I assume not related to that, but just true. And so I'm going to be just reaching out to everyone on the list of members of the committee, just personally, to see if people are still interested in serving. If anyone is interested in joining, please feel free to reach out to me. We're doing EA voice emails bi-monthly just because we have so little support right now. We just had one in March, so our next will be May. Ellie Crum, thank you, has volunteered to be our spotlight employee assembly member. So thank you so much. You'll be highlighted. And our subcommittee for awards recognition is wrapping up George Peter, moving forward with employee excellence, finalizing those items. The next award will be staff integrity. And Kristen Saferi has asked me to reach out to just see if anyone has been interested in supporting with images. Pia, I think I saw you on the call earlier. I don't know if you're handling that, if you still could use some support. I know you talked about doing it, but I don't know if you actually have the time. Sorry, you're chewing. you're muted if you want it. You're just like.
Sorry. I've been working on those. I think we have links to like the form to apply, and those need to be new. I don't know. I'm just like concentrating on the image.
Okay. All right. Well, so you could either reach out to Kristen or Pia if you're interested in supporting that. And we're also just holding off right now on, we're trying to figure out what additional celebrations we'll actually be able to have with our constrained budget. So we're looking into that as an executive board. And our next committee meeting will be April 8th, 2:15 p.m.
Thank you, Rose. Moving on to the Employee Education and Development Committee. That is dead.
Hi, everyone. This will be very quick. I have no updates to share at this time and no meeting on the books yet, as we're still kind of in holding about what to focus on. That's all.
Thanks, Deb. Employee Welfare Committee, Christine.
Hello. First, I'd like to apologize for I wasn't here last. I was in a training session, so I've not been here as consistently as I had been in the past. The Welfare Committee has been meeting regularly, even though I wasn't here to report out on it. We have tried to open up my notes from last meeting, and I'm not seeing them. We've been engaging in conversation with around kind of campus climate and concerns, staffing, how staff who are on grant funds are faring. Yvonne has been chairing a subcommittee on transportation concerns. And that's pretty much it. Yvonne, do you want to give an update or?
Sure, thank you, Christy. So we recently obtained the, as we voted as the EA to obtain a, to submit a data request to Parking and Transportation Services, we received it, I believe, a week and a half ago. So our committee is reviewing that data to then figure out how do we move forward with different proposals for parking. More to come. And I know that we have a reception later today with some of the board of trustees. So hopefully we can engage in conversations about things that are important to us as employees. And I think one of them is definitely parking. Thank you.
Yes, and we also discussed the board meeting reception today. There were some recommendations on how we engage with the board. Both expressing our thanks and trust in thanks to them for volunteering, our trust in them for taking, you know, care of us in the institution during this time, and also being able to articulate the ways in which staff are feeling stressed and strained, and being able to articulate truly how our jobs feel and our work, how it's impacted. And the last thing I would offer is Cornell's Care Fund has revamped and will be the fundraising side of it has revamped, and we are launching a new website and a new campaign on Giving Tiers that will be released the first week of April. So check it out, and maybe Rose, if you want to feature that in the next EA Voice, I can get you some information.
Thank you, Christy and Yvonne. Our next committee is our Benefits and Policy Committee. Bethany.
Hi, everyone. So
Our next meeting got, I shifted it to next Thursday, the 27th. Usually it would occur tomorrow, the 20th. So as usual, if anyone wants to come who's not on the list, please let me know. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about.
Thank you, Stephanie. And then next is our elections committee, Stephanie.
Yes, thank you. So we had the candidate info session, mandatory info session yesterday afternoon. That went really well. So technically, right from the end of that meeting, the campaigning began, is allowed, and that will run up to when voting starts on April 3rd. So that will be there. And I do have, Eric was in the meeting yesterday as well, and he was able to put the link of the candidates, their profiles and their info on the website. So that is a link there. It's right under the two red boxes. If you go to the site, it has meet the candidates. That link will take you to meet those candidates as well, in case anyone was interested. But from there, yes, so we just have some waiting time until voting begins next month.
Awesome. Thanks, Stephanie. And now moving on to our liaison reports, our UA Campus Codes Committee.
Erica, that would be me. We haven't had a meeting since the end of January. There's been so many changes with the new administration on campus. I checked in with Nicholas Baggert, the undergrad who's the chair of the committee, a few weeks ago, and he just said, no, we haven't made any progress. I haven't really dug into, you know, why or what he's thinking, but maybe I'll do that and see where we're going. But yeah, nothing new to report there. Just there hasn't been a meeting since the end of January. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. UA Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and Environment.
Hi, Erica, that's me. We also have not met since our initial meeting. I do plan on reaching out at some point this week to try to gauge if there's going to be any other meetings for the semester. Thank you.
Thanks, Yvonne. UA Campus Welfare Committee.
I'm pleased that I finally have something to share. Thanks to Marcy, I connected with the leadership of the committee, and we met last night, actually. So the committee is trying to pass two different resolutions before the semester ends. One of them is to change the university's policy about time off in relation or in face of a tragedy on campus, like a death or something like that. That's something that they're trying to develop a policy or a resolution that would support faculty, staff, students, and such. And the second resolution is to bring menstrual products to non-gendered or women's bathrooms on campus. The original attempt was to do all bathrooms, but because of budget restrictions, they feel they can take about $15,000 off. So that is where we stand, and the goal is to get those two resolutions passed by the committee, voted on by the committee, next month, and then moved forward by the end of the semester.
Thanks, Brian. Next would be the campus planning committee.
Is that me? I'm not sure. I can tell you that they haven't had a meeting yet this semester. I think there's a meeting next week. Let me just confirm. The first meeting is Wednesday, the 26th. That will be the first meeting of spring.
Thank you so much, Christy. Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board. I think that's Dave again.
Yeah, sorry. I just was talking. We actually did meet. I emailed the other committee members, and we got together with Mark. Unfortunately, I had RSV. So after I was really bummed out, I had to actually miss the training that I had kind of pushed for. But they did have the orientation with everyone else. And Mark, who's over in transportation, does the appeals. He sent me the PowerPoint slides. He is saying that, you know, all's good. it's been really quiet because there hasn't, apparently doesn't, they don't, there's something about how he does things that there aren't really appeals for us to review at this point, but he was very helpful and agreeable, and I appreciated that for him, and you know, asked us to reach out at any time, and basically we're just kind of in the loop waiting to see if something comes down that we need to review as a committee. So it seems good. And yeah, happy to take any questions, but thanks.
Thanks, Dave. The next is the Committee for Campus Constituency Elected Trustees. That is me. And so we have met to talk about the undergraduate student trustee. And so their campaigning is going to begin this spring. And so we're just really waiting for that to open and close. And then we'll have a new student, undergraduate student elected trustee. So the next is Faculty Senate.
That's me. President Kotlikoff came and kind of did just the general, this is all the stuff going on presentation. Talked a lot about the budget restrictions, about impending taxation of everything, but primarily the endowment, talked about trying to sort of buffer in expected concessions to the grad students, knowing that that probable strike is coming up. And then we had David Hoden come in and talk about the surveillance program. Response to that was more political than anything else. And we had Bridget and Reed from Transportation came in, and we're talking about the EV chargers. Apparently, those have been free this whole time, and they haven't been enforcing the time limit in the garages. So people are just basically parking and charging their cars for free all day long. So there's so many things with that. But anyway, so what they're talking about doing is some sort of like a credit system for the amount of gas or the amount of electricity that you're using to fuel your electric vehicles. And they're also talking about adding more units across campus that are apparently about $250,000 a piece plus maintenance. Talking about adding those to areas like A lot and B lot that aren't restricted by permits so much, because right now it's further inequitable by being in paid garages only. And there were residential people that like live in Hasbrook that were interested in having them more close, whether paid for or not. There was interest in putting them under like solar covers so that they could be kind of solar charged. And Bridget said that the technology that does that isn't really reliable enough to invest in that right now. That was a whole thing that I was surprised about. And let's see, what else was there? Just preparing for the probable grad strike was sort of the guidance at the end.
Thanks, Danielle. So moving on to our next item on the agenda, is open discussion. Does anybody have anything that they would like to openly discuss? Yes, Carl.
There's an opportunity for us to bring any concerns from the general community to the trustees, and we've heard a lot of concerns from staff members, but we're wondering if anyone has any supplemental items that they wish to hear. I'm not sure how much we can divulge from that meeting, but if there's questions or concerns that you would like us to bring to the trustees, I'd feel comfortable, because I'm going to that meeting. If you email me, I can bring those to, or email any of the EA reps that would like to raise their hand and say they're going to that meeting today. We'd be happy to bring those concerns to the trustees and give you as much feedback as we could on those.
Thank you, Carl. Yvonne, you had your hand up. Did you still want to speak?
Yeah, sorry. Just a thought about, you know, like what you were sharing, Danielle, about number one, charging for the EV chargers, and number two, implementing more. I'm just trying to figure out, like, the charging component, I think I understand, right? Like, if people are using it, there's potentially some type of payment that needs to happen. But with the limiting parking situation already, and then expanding this investment into, I guess, electrifying campus, as positive as it sounds, it's going to take away parking from other individuals and designate them as EV spots specifically. Then I wonder, right, if they're talking about enforcing the, I think it's like 3 hours max parking in that spot, how is that going to, again, continuously impact people as they're gonna have to park there for 3 hours, come back, whether they're an employee or a residential student, have to move their car, figure out where can they park with our limited space already. So I you know, like, as much as it sounds as a positive investment, I hesitate to think that it's going to actually benefit the broader community.
Yeah, the broader community was my primary issue, because as it stands, like in the Human Ecology Garage, there are already spots designated as EV only on the chargers. And people are parking there all day. The faculty who were raising issues with not being able to park and charge for free all day were saying that they don't have an opportunity to get back to the garage to move their vehicles. And if they did that 3 hours later, as would make sense, there's probably not a spot for them. So that definitely creates issues, and is sort of a general equity piece. This is benefiting some of us a lot more than others, and the ones it's benefiting, it's costing a lot to benefit. That was my primary concern, the fact that they weren't paying this whole time is something. Their argument for having them is more for, like, you know, people traveling distances that need to charge on campus, like to go to take their pets to the vet clinic, things like that. But that's not how it's being used. It's being used for mostly faculty. But they did say, because somebody asked, I don't remember who our contract is with, but it is not with Tesla, and we will not be purchasing Tesla components.
Jeremy?
I just wanted to say that I think there's definitely some need for controls there. I'm actually an EV owner myself, and if I were still regularly traveling the campus, I would never need the charger, because I charge at home every day. There would be no purpose to it. So what we're talking about are only people that need to travel extreme distances to and from work in an EV, which, yeah, all for moving the needle towards EVs, we have to. But I think that while it's a great convenience, we have problems right now with having enough spaces available for folks. And we need specifically for those folks that travel long distances, low to no cost spaces for those folks, with the ability to get them to their job and back home again. So I think that's the bigger concern for most people. Access to those spots. The fact that you can't get out and move it after 3 hours, that's a you problem, I think. There needs to be a way to control those spaces so that they're being used for the things they actually need to be used for, and not the, yeah, but it's kind of hard for me to go do this extra step kind of thing.
Thanks, Jeremy. Yvonne?
Yeah, I think, you know, like, it raises the question of inequity, kind of like Danielle was sharing, right? Like, because those EV chargers, as of right now, specifically, they are in the garages, as far as I know. I don't know if there's any others that are not in the Human Ecology Garage or Hoy Garage. And those are some of the most expensive parking permits. So you're already, you know, like benefiting in different areas in different ways. And to the claim that, you know, like this is supposed to be for someone who may travel to the hospital, to the animal hospital, the charger is in Hoy Garage. That's not near the hospital at all. So I'm sorry, but I find that a little bit absurd that that is one of the examples that was brought up.
Thank you, Yvonne. Marcy?
I was just wondering if it was explored to have like the charging stations maybe over at one of the maintenance buildings or over by Fleet Garage where someone can actually police it. And like, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be another person to really police these chargers. And I think it shouldn't be in a garage. It should be in like, that is just me talking off the top of my head. I know nothing, but just like somewhere where, you know, you can move it and someone who can police it and say, yep, your time is up. Come and get your car or whatever. And just for a point of reference, at the vet college, we have no EV chargers. But we've talked about getting one for clients for sure, but we have nothing.
Thank you, Marcy. Adam?
Just to add, I was an early adopter. I had a Honda Fit electric vehicle that only got 80 miles range. So I used to charge in the Ecology Garage. One of the things I noticed, and this happens everywhere where you see EV parking, is you have cars that are not true EVs, they're hybrids, and they're parked in the EV charging station, topping off their supplemental electric battery. So that's just another point of contention, whereas people that need to charge to get home or, you know, I mean, these things should also be planned out before you buy the EV. You know, how am I going to get to work and charge? That should be, you know, we shouldn't have to address that after the fact. But I just wanted to mention about the hybrids taking up the spots. It's my big thing.
Thanks, Adam. Bethany?
Was Allison ahead of me? Okay. I'm happy to table this for a couple minutes later, but I wanted to ask everyone if there's sort of a strategy that you're thinking of as to how we all sort of present and approach things tonight. I'm asking because I'm very stubborn and have no problem sort of speaking about concerns and things, but I also want to be aware that I want to be a helpful part of representing employee assembly when I'm at this meeting. So I guess I was just sort of asking for like a temperature check or maybe, I don't know, anything like that. And maybe it's not useful to ask for a wide consensus or thoughts on that, but it just came up in my mind.
Thanks, Bethany. Rose?
I'm just sort of curious how many, because if you start adding up how many, like multiple slots at what are 250,000 each, I'm like, could we get a parking garage instead?
Thanks, Rose. Carl?
Probably helps if I unmute. For tonight, I have a couple questions that I have prepared, mostly around budgetary stuff, ways that the university can be innovative in how they think about solutions in the future and utilize the people power that they have. Those around communications. So I have some of those prepared. I'm happy to meet and talk with either you, Bethany, or others that want to discuss how to bring them up. I'm happy to share those with you. And I think those were the main concerns that I heard. If there are other concerns, I'm happy to think about them as well.
Thank you, Carl. Jeremy?
To the point of cost on those, one is, I think that I'd be interested in seeing the costing, but because there are companies that are very much trying to get more of these stations out there, and there's ways to work that. Also, we should be charging. It's same as you pay for any fuel for your vehicle. We should be charging for these, and that's part of the way you recoup the cost over time for the service. And we do need to figure out globally, this is not Cornell. Globally, we need to figure out how to prioritize these services for the people who actually need them so that folks don't just spend all of their time eating up the only spots available. But as more of them become available, that becomes less of a problem too. So I think we're in a transition period here, which we haven't quite figured out the logistics and the policies around it. It's a thing that we do need to figure out. And I think that's what we're trying to do is get along that path.
Point of information, there are 5 minutes left in the meeting.
Yes. So in the interest of time, well, actually, is there a motion on the floor to extend the meeting? I don't know whose hands up for what. I know Michael's was up to speak. So Jeremy, is this an extending of the meeting?
Okay. No, my hand was still up.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, since we only have Michael, we may not need to extend the meeting. So Michael, you're recognized.
Thank you. So for the EV chargers, after Danielle had alerted me to the Faculty Senate discussing it, I poked around here because transportation has worked out of FNCS. There was a focus group. There was a meeting of some minds to go over those vehicle charge or the vehicle chargers that I just learned about. I'll find out if I can get an accurate number, if the 250 is actually true. They were costing them a lot of money. But the other part, the problem with charging for them is we're tax exempt. And if we sell electricity to us as employees, it's a retail sale and it has to have sales tax. And so it becomes a difficulty. Then you have to meter the vehicle chargers. And if ChargePoint, their ChargePoint is very expensive. It's a kind of a subscription service. So anyway, there's a lot more to these chargers than meets the eye. I'll try to report back to you if I can find more on this end.
Thank you, Michael. All right. So any last thoughts, concerns, questions in this 2 minutes that we have? Dave?
Sorry, a quick question. I know there's a hiring freeze in place. Has there been any talk about the salary improvement program if the SIPs has been affected at all?
So there hasn't, right. Thank you. Hiring pause. So with the hiring pause that we're on right now, there hasn't been any definitive information around whether or not SIP will be impacted. However, it is being looked at. So we're not sure how that is going to come down the pipeline for us. If SIP is still occurring, we don't know to what degree it will occur. And so we're just waiting to hear more from our liaison about SIP. We will report out when we have more information to give. All right. Michael, is your hand back up?
No, sorry, I was asleep with the switch. Forgot to take it down.
Oh, no worries. Yvonne?
Yeah, sorry, real quick before we wrap up. As you know, the interim president Kotlikoff and vice president of HR, Lovely, are coming on April 16. We did send out a link to all the EA reps to get questions. So please make sure that if you do have any questions, you submit them by April 2nd. I'll send a link reminder later today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And we will move forward to adjournment. Is there a motion on the floor to adjourn by unanimous consent?
Motion to adjourn by unanimous consent.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All right. Probably moved in second. And we are adjourned on Wednesday, March 19th, 2025 at 1:15 p.m. Bye, everybody.